In a country where tens of thousands of people die every year from low wages and poverty, we got to raise up now. In a country where 400 families make $97,000 an hour and corporate crooks get free bailout money while we arrest people and put people in jail who are fighting for 15. We can't wait. We've got to raise up now.
We organized, we stood up, and we went on strike, and we shut it down. If we don't get it, shut it down. We want to live in a country where we can earn a living wage, pay our bills, feed our children, and hey, possibly save some money for retirement.
Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW, Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam. Today, a post-Labor Day special featuring voices of workers from the first Fight for 15 convention held August 12th and August 13th, 2016, 2 hours south of D.C. in Richmond, Virginia. Organizers of the Fight for 15 movement say that since its launch 4 years ago, with fast food workers, 20 million low-wage workers have gained significant raises, and the movement has helped to put the spotlight on the working poor and wealth inequality in the United States. The movement has expanded to include child care teachers, adjunct professors, janitors, and home care workers. Our show begins with the convention, march, and rally, including a keynote address by the Reverend William Barber, and ends in the second half with remarks by workers attending the convention.
Why do we want
15?
When do we want it?
Now!
Say, what do we want?
15.
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
15.
When do we want it? Now!
Aloha, aloha! No wage workers! Whose streets?
Our streets!
Whose streets?
Streets?
All right, that's what I like to hear. My name is Jarrell Ware, and I work at McDonald's. I'm on the National Organizing Committee, and I'm from New York City! New York! All right, here we go. Welcome to Virginia, everybody. We are here making history! It all started with fast food workers going on strike in 2012. From what we are able to create, from that we was able to create a diverse movement that includes not two, but 20 different industries under one umbrella. We want $15 in Seattle, New York, California, and even at UPMC. We are here in Richmond to combat structural racism. The Robert E. Lee statue, right behind me, yeah, exactly, represents racism, oppression, hate, and slavery.
Bring it down.
Bring it down.
He represents the Confederacy. In the course of history, the Confederates lost! Losers! Today, the Confederacy represents people that want to build walls, that don't believe in raising the wages, that don't believe in unions, police officers that kill unarmed black men, women, men during the Civil War represented love, justice, freedom, and they won.
Woo!
Just like the Union, we follow in other footsteps of other great movements, like the women's rights movement, like the abolition movement, and the civil rights movement. All movements created a change in this country right here. You may not feel like Martin Luther King Jr. You may not feel like Malcolm X. But you guys remember Selma? Who remembers Selma? I want everybody to take a look around them. This is our Selma! This is our Selma! We started the Fight for 15 movement. We represent people that win, not lose. So brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay focused, and most important, let's continue to make history. I'd like to bring to the stage my sister Anna.
You got it. You got it.
A fellow fast food leader from North Carolina. Let's give a round of applause to my girl, Anna.
I'm 29 years old. I'm a single mother. I work at Sonic. I make $8.25 as a manager. I've been at fast food for 10 years now. And in that 10 years, I've seen many discriminations. I've seen employees fired because of the color of their skin. I've seen people discriminated against because of sexual orientation. Myself and others have even experienced things such as wage theft and sexual harassment. Even recently, I had an employee quit because the general manager called her ghetto.
That ain't right!
That ain't right.
That ain't right!
I was always told, the whole 10 years, that I just had to deal with it. That we just had to learn to put up with it. So 2 years ago, I joined the Fight for 15 movement. And during that time, they told me I didn't have to put up with it.
Yes.
But they even taught me how to fight to change it.
Yeah.
And from there, I taught others how to do the same.
Yeah.
Then I started going to more Mondays.
Yeah.
Yeah. More Mondays is a big event in North Carolina.
That's right.
And more Mondays, I saw a man there. He inspired me to do much. He also taught me that we didn't have to put up with it at home just like we do our jobs. Because if we don't have to deal with it at work, why do we have to deal with it in our community? He also taught us that if we all move forward together, we'll all never take one step back. With that, I'd like to introduce Reverend William Barber.
Brothers and sisters, I'm glad to be with you in Richmond today, and I'm honored to join you at this national convention in the Fight for 15. I don't come as somebody that just comes to speak. I've stood with you in the streets, in front of McDonald's and other places. I've joined you in jail for the cause. Because I believe this fight and the fight for health care and the fight for voting rights and the fight against police brutality and violence are among the most important battles in our country today. And this movement in many ways is as important as the SNCC movement was in the 1960s. Because right now you are helping to build a third reconstruction in America. And I've been traveling, President Mary Kay, and all of you who are working with SEIU and the Fight for 15. I've been traveling all over the country with others leading the revival, Time for a Moral Revolution of Values, and thousands have shown up. And in those thousands, Fight for 15 was always in the mix, because Fight for 15 knows that the time for America to do right is right now. Now it is fitting that we are gathered in the capital of the former Confederacy to face this nation's peculiar labor history. If you follow the James River from this city down to the sea, you will find the place where my African American ancestors first set foot on these shores. My African American ancestors were brought here to work the land, to build this nation, but they were paid nothing for their labor. And after America's Civil War, when African Americans served in the Southern legislatures for the first time, they built a movement with poor whites. Poor whites and black people came together. They rewrote the constitutions of every Southern state, including North Carolina and Virginia. They banned slavery. They banned work without pay. They demanded equal protection under the law. And this wasn't in 1960s, this was in the 1860s. And in my home state, preachers, white and black, demanded moral language be in the new Southern Constitution. In fact, they wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all persons are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, the enjoyment of the fruit of your labor, and the pursuit of happiness." Because they knew that labor without living wages was nothing but a pseudo form of slavery. And this has been the pattern in our history. We've never been what we should have been in America, but every step forward, every stride toward a more perfect union has been the result of people like us coming together, pushing a moral agenda, an economic agenda, a justice agenda. And that's why we have to resist those today who will try to divide us, try to tell us what's not possible, especially in the South. That's why I'm glad my Northern brother is down here in the South to say that when we organize the South, we're going to change the nation. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt, I see a sign there, was in the presidency and a woman was his labor secretary, Frances Perkins, in 1938. And businesses were telling Franklin Delano Roosevelt, if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to lose jobs. The president's answer was, no business which depends for its existence on paying less than living wages to its workers has any right to continue in this country called America. That was 83 years ago. Roosevelt stood up to the greedy corporate leaders in the South and in the North who wanted to block rights and living wages. And today, we must confront the lies and the myths. One lie is that the minimum wage is enough. The truth is, in 2005, a minimum wage paycheck brought less than it had 49 of the last 50 years. Somebody ought to tell truth. The truth is that living wages raise productivity, that living wages decrease turnover, and that living wages builds jobs. And that's not just me or Mary Kay, that's hundreds of business leaders and leading economists. When you pay people more, it's good for them and it's good for the economy. is good for America. And when you know this history, you understand why we are right to fight for 15 and a union. Just touch somebody and say, we're right to fight for 15 and a union. And we cannot turn back now. We can't wait. Dr. King said in 64, every member of Fight for 15 ought to get this book. Why we can't wait. It was Dr. King's last book. It was clear about economic justice and civil rights. He looked hatred in the face. And he said that we couldn't wait any longer to dismantle the systems of race, poverty, and black voter disenfranchisement. He said in that book that we needed to, like Lincoln, reach the better angels of our nation. He called on America to pass a bill of rights for the poor and the working poor. He called on America to fund a Marshall Plan to help poor folk in the urban cities and poor people in the mountains of Appalachia and poor people all over the South. You know, a few weeks ago at the DNC, I talked about a defibrillator and how we need to shock the heart of this nation. Dr. King demanded billions of dollars for a war on poverty rather than war on poor people, because he knew that we would needed to shock this nation. But back then, he said, while Negroes form the vast majority of America's disadvantage, there are millions of poor whites who would also benefit from a massive bottom-up stimulus. And I say to my white brothers and sisters, we've got to stop being fooled now. There are 8 million more white poor people than there are black people. There are 5 million more poor white people than there are Latinos. There are some in the South and in other parts of the country that want to keep white people and black people and Latino people away from each other, because they know if we ever come together. And I declare to you today, we must hear what Dr. King said. We can't wait. Hard-working people can't wait. Mothers trying to raise their children can't wait. Fast food workers can't wait. Healthcare workers, airport workers, restaurant workers, minimum wage workers, and even many of our good policemen that make less than a living wage, they can't wait either. The truth of the matter is, as I stand here in front of the statue, not behind it, it took us 400 years to go from slavery to now, to get from zero to 725. We can't wait another 400 years. In America, we've got to raise up. In a country where tens of thousands of people die every year from low wages and poverty, we got to raise up now. In a country where 400 families make $97,000 an hour and corporate crooks get free bailout money while we arrest people and put people in jail who are fighting for 15, we can't wait. We've got to raise up now. When unarmed black and brown children and men and women are shot down, not by the police, but by rogue police, who really undermine the role of good police, we can't wait. We've got to raise up now. When the greedy attempt to buy elections through money and hostile takeovers, and legislatures are caught red-handed passing racist and discriminatory voting laws to suppress the vote and undermine the political power of black, brown, and white coalitions in the South, we've got to raise up now. Do you realize in the South, in the 11 southern states from North Carolina to Texas, if you control the South, you control 22 Senate seats in the U.S. Senate, which means you only need 4 more from the other 39 states to be in control. You control 31% of the House of Representatives, which means you only need 20% from the other 39 states. You control 160 electoral votes in 11 states, which means if you control the 11 southern states and you divide black and white and brown people, you'd only need 112 electoral votes from the other 39 states. I stop by to say, we can't wait. You're right. We have to fight now. Now, I know that some of you, somebody says, well, we are wrong sometimes, Mary Kay, to lay in the street. We're wrong to do civil disobedience. We're not wrong. But it is wrong for the richest nation in the world to pay half of its African American workers, 54% of African Americans, to make less than a living wage. It is wrong for 64 million Americans in this country to make less than a living wage. It is wrong for politicians in the South to pit white workers against workers of color and against immigrants, all workers that make less than $15 an hour. It is wrong that after we win living wages in cities across the South, like Birmingham, then the state legislatures intervene and vote against those cities. Or like in North Carolina, they pit the transsexual community against the black community. They claim they're passing a bathroom bill, but actually the bathroom bill is full of it. It's full of anti-worker legislation. It's full of pro-discrimination. It's full of legislation to block cities from raising the minimum wages. That bill needs to be flushed. So my brothers and sisters, you're not wrong. Tell somebody, we're not wrong. You're not wrong to raise up. That's why I'm joined here today by a host of clergy. You saw them this morning, we met afterwards. All across the nation, because raising wages is a moral issue. It's about right and wrong. And any attempt to claim to be a Christian or claim to be evangelical or claim to be religious and religiously right, and it doesn't begin with a critique of systemic poverty and challenging economic justice, that is nothing but theological malpractice. It is a contemporary form of pharisaical hypocrisy, and it borders on a heretical interpretation of scriptures, because there are more scriptures in the Bible and other sacred texts about love and justice and fairness and the poor and helping the least of these than there are any other subject in all of religion. In the Quran, it says men shall have the benefit of what they earn, and women shall have the benefit of what they earn. In the book of James, it says, the wages of laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, their pain is crying out, and the Lord hears. In Leviticus, it says, you shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him or her of their wages. In Jeremiah, it says, whatever nation builds its house on unrighteousness and your upper rooms by injustice and makes your neighbor serve him for nothing and does not give him or her wages, that nation, that house is under the judgment of God. Timothy says you don't muzzle the ox because the laborer deserves his wages. Malachi says I'm going to draw near to judgment. I will be swift witness against those who oppress the hired worker in his wages and hurt the widows and the immigrants and the children. Deuteronomy says, you shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy. Ezekiel says, this is the guilt, your pride, your excess food, your prosperous ease, and you did not pay the poor what they deserve. Isaiah 10 says, woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights. Isaiah 58 says, loose the bands of wickedness. Translation in Hebrew, pay people what they deserve. And then your nation shall be called a repairer of the breach. You are right to raise up and declare that we can't wait any longer. But as I close this convention today, there are going to be forces, my sister, my brother, that will always try to reject us. And when I look out on this crowd today, I know that many of you, like me, have sometimes felt rejected. Why do we have to march so much and go to jail so much to get folk to do so just right? Some of you out there, you've been rejected by some because of the color of your skin. I know it's so. Some of you felt rejection because of the kind of work you do. And people make you feel like you don't matter. Some of you have been rejected because of where you're from. You weren't born in America. Some of you have been made to feel rejected because of who you love, because of your sexuality. Some of you have been made to feel rejected because of how you talk. Some of you have been made to feel rejected because you're raising children out of wedlock, or you have a prison record, or you have some kind of other stain that makes people want to reject you and push you back. But can I be a preacher for the next 7 minutes? Because I've got good news for the rejected. I come from a faith tradition, and the psalm says the stone that the builder rejected has become the chief cornerstone. In other words, the rejected have power to come together. And when the stones that have been rejected come together, then something powerful can happen. And I know the power of coming together. I know it biblically. When Moses and his people and that rod came together, Pharaoh came down and the Red Sea opened up. Wish I had a witness here. When Esther and her uncle Mordecai came together, they were able to stop the destruction of the Jewish people. Do I have a witness here? When David and his rock and his slingshot and his faith came together, Goliath fell. And they tell me the next morning the headline in the Richmond Dispatch read, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. When Shadrach, Meshach, and that bad Negro got together down in the fiery furnace, God cooled down the furnace and blessed them with a moving. I know what coming together does biblically. When God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost got together, things went from crucifixion to resurrection. But not only that, I know what coming together does historically. Truth is, when truth and justice has never lost. I didn't say truth didn't get beat up sometimes. I didn't say truth didn't get arrested sometimes. But when it's all over and the dust clears, truth will win. Justice will win. Love will win. During slavery, it looked like justice had lost. But when Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and Quakers and white evangelicals got together, they broke slavery down. Women didn't have the right to vote. But when Sojourner Truth and Elizabeth Canton Staten got together, they won the right to vote. Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal, looked like it had the victory for 58 years. But when Thurgood Marshall and white lawyers and black lawyers and Jewish lawyers got together, the court voted 9-0 to overturn Plessy. It looked like Jim Crow had injustice beaten down. But when Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Bayard Rustin and A. Philip Randolph and white labor leaders got together with Jonathan Daniels and Viola Wilson, they tore Jim Crow down. Apartheid was strong in South Africa. But when Mandela and Bishop Tutu and the mothers of the young people got together, they brought apartheid down. I know what happens biblically when we come together. I know what happens historically when we come together. But I also know what happens personally when we come together. Let me close. Several years ago, some said I might never walk again. They said I might never get out of a wheelchair again. I was 30 years old and had always depended on my legs, Yara. But I woke up one morning and I couldn't move. I spent 3 months in the hospital bed, not knowing if I'd ever get up and walk again without major help. For 12 years, I was in a wheelchair or on a walker. But over those 12 years, somehow my mind got together, and my doctors got together, and my nurses got together, and my swim coach got together, and my therapist got together, and my church got together, and the prayer warriors got together, and my faith got together, and God's spirit got together. And when they all got together, I can jump now. I can march now. I can stand now. I can be with the fight for 15 now. And I've been marching ever since. And I stop by to tell you, I'm a witness. When we all get together, when the stones that the builders rejected get together, when we build, we'll get together. When fight for 15 and a union and voting rights and Black Lives Matter and health care and clergy, when we all get together, when we all get together, when we all get together, when we all get together. What a day, what a day, what a day, what a day, what a day of justice it will be.
When we all get together, what a day of rejoicing that will be. What a day of rejoicing that will be. when we all get together, what a day of rejoicing that will be when we all see justice. One more time, everybody, as loud as you can. When we all get together, what a day of rejoicing that will be when we all see justice. We will sing and shout victory. Victory! Let me hear you say victory. Victory! Victory! Victory!
I'm there. How y'all doing? And we want to welcome you to the Fight for 15 Convention. Hi, my name is Betty Douglas, a.k.a. Betty Douglas. Betty, Mama Betty. Mama Betty from St. Louis. Woo! How y'all doing today?
And for those of y'all that don't know me, my name is Blue Rainer, and I'm from Tampa, Florida. And we're members of the National Organizing Committee for the Fight for 15.
I'm 58, I have three sons, and I work for McDonald's. I've been working for McDonald's for 9 years, and I only make $7.90.
Hey, hold on, Mama, hold on. Hold on, Mama, hold on. Hold on, Mama, hold on, hold on, hold on. Mama, you say you've been working for McDonald's for 9 years.
Yeah.
And you only make $7.90?
Hey, hey, I was starting off with $7.25.
Mama, that sounds like some chunk change.
Oh, baby, it is. That's like what, 10, what, 10 cents a year?
No, Mom, that's actually less than 10 cents a year.
Oh, man, you know that ain't right.
That part. So I'm 27 years old, guys. I live in Tampa, Florida. I work at Chipotle. I make only $9 an hour. But like Mama Betty said, I've also been in the fast food industry for 9 long years.
That ain't right.
That ain't right.
That ain't right.
And we're here today because we want 15
and a union.
And a union. We want to see who else out there wants 15
in the union. Who else wants 15 in the union? You sure you want 15 in the union? I can't tell.
A fast food worker at McDonald's here in Richmond, VA. I have seen economic changes in our city. For example, my dad, Herman, may rest in peace, didn't even have a high school education. He was able to afford to take care of me and my whole family all by himself. We had a house, we had a car, and we had food on the table. And here I am with a college education. education. And I am forced to live with my children in order to pay the bills. This makes me frustrated. I am frustrated because I cannot support myself by myself. And it also makes me afraid because for my children and my children's children, that they won't be able to take care of themselves. We work hard. We deserve better.
Take your time. It's all right.
But let me tell you about winning at my store. For years, we've been living with low poverty wages and disrespectful managers. But since the fight for 15, there's been a change. Me and my co-workers, we ain't taking it no more. So on July 21st, 2016, we organized, we stood up, and we went on strike, and we shut it down. But there is a lot of work that still needs to be done. But we are not afraid. We won't back down. We won't give in. We will win. We are winners. And you know why? Because the fight for 15 is in full effect. And now, it's giving me a warm welcome to my sister, Miss Lauren Lynn.
Welcome to Richmond. I am honored to be here amongst all of you. I am a home care worker and the home care chapter chair of SEIU Virginia 512. Both my parents were union workers. They marched with Dr. King on Washington. The reason we're here in Richmond today is that this is the former capital of the Confederacy. A place where people were thought of as less. The work they did was thought of as less. But as a black woman, we always did the grunt work for low wages. White babies drank from our breasts. But we couldn't drink from their fountains. White families relied on us to care for their elderly parents. But we couldn't ride the bus with them. We cleaned their schools, but our children couldn't attend. We cooked their food, but we couldn't sit at the table. Well, now we say enough is enough. Yeah. governor restored the voting rights of 206,000 ex-felons. We want those voices heard in November. We want to live in a country where we can earn a living wage, pay our bills, feed our children, and hey, possibly save some money for retirement. Thank you.
We want 15 in the union and we want it now. And if we don't get it, then we gon' shut it down. We want 15 in the union and we want it now. And if we don't get it, then we gon' shut it down. 15 in the union. 15 in the union. 15 in the union. 15 in the union. That's what we want. That's what we need. That's what we want. That's what we need.
My name is Cynthia Bassett, and I'm an early educator from San Bernardino, California. For the past 17 years, my greatest joy has been teaching our littlest learners. Even a greater joy is when children in my care grow up and attend college. Ago, I got a call from a former student. He called to tell me that he had been accepted to UCLA. I am so proud of him. He is an example of how access to early education is the foundation that creates powerful, powerful academic success. Education and higher education contribute significantly to sustain creative minds. Creative minds is what improve our economy. But the reality is, higher learning and early learning are in crisis. Childcare workers struggle to make ends meet. Parents struggle to pay for childcare. College costs too much for students to get a degree. Campus workers and even professors are living in poverty. That's why child care and higher ed are in the fight for 15. In California, we won millions for early child care and for early education. We even got the wage to $15 an hour. Child care is in the news. It's a priority for this election. Thousands of faculty across this country have formed unions. We're improving pay in colleges and job security for part-time faculty. Graduate students, tenured faculty are also joining the fight for 15. Together, we shall win. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. In part three, we want to hear from Stephen Lynn from the Home Care Fight for 15.
Hello, everyone. My name is Stephen Lynn. I'm a dietary aide from Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I work at a nursing home in Bridgeport, Connecticut. We're winning huge in our fight for 15. Our jobs in the healthcare industry is to provide care and touch those who are most vulnerable in today's society. I'm talking about the disabled, the elderly, and those who need medical care. Our work is valued. It's time for us to stand up and be valued. We are winning fights every day, and here are some of our victories. Hospital workers in Minnesota, Maryland, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Washington have won their fight for 15. Wait, what? Let me repeat myself. hospital workers in Massachusetts, Maryland, Minnesota, Washington, and Pennsylvania have won their fight for 15. Nursing home workers in my home state, Connecticut, Florida, and Pennsylvania have won their fight for 15. Home care workers in Oregon, Massachusetts, and on Tuesday, Washington have won their fight for 15. Community care workers in Canada in their Sweet 16 fight won their fight for 16. And let me add that Minnesota and Pennsylvania have won their unions. Closer to home, I had a coworker of mine who was on the path to termination due to unlawful means. Thanks to our union, they stepped in and they saved his job. So I see that and I want to set the trend, not just here in my home state and here in VA, around the world. Bless up.
Thank you, Stephen Lynn, from the Nursing Home and Home Care Fight for 15. Amazing victories. And now, Norma Esmeralda Cisneros at Pod 1 from Property Services in Denver. Norma.
Buenas noches a todos. Soy Norma Cisneros, janitors, orgullosamente miembro de Local 105 de Denver, Colorado.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Norma Cisneros. I am a janitor from, I'm a proud janitor from, and a member of the Local 105 in Denver.
Donde acabamos de negociar un nuevo contrato para 2,400 janitors en Denver.
Where we have just agreed to a new contract for 2,500 janitors.
Hay un futuro, pero tenemos que trabajar para alcanzarlo.
There is a bright future, but we must work in order to achieve it.
En el convenio pasado ganamos aseguranzas médicas y vacaciones.
In the last contract, we actually won vacations and also medical insurance.
Tuvimos que luchar para no perder lo que ya teníamos.
But of course, we had to fight to keep those rights.
Pero logramos ganar en el convenio nuevo. Llegamos al mínimo de $15 para cada janitor.
With the new contract, we were actually able to get every janitor at a minimum wage of $15.
Muchísimas gracias, Norma.
Para mí porque cambió mi vida.
She said it was very powerful because it changed her life. She had two jobs and was able to quit the second one.
Gracias.
Gracias, Norma. Se puede. Se puede. Se puede. Yes, we can. Thank you so much to the janitors in Denver for showing us we can win 15. And now, sisters and brothers, I want you to hear from Darius Cephas, a fast food leader from the National Organizing Committee.
How you guys doing tonight? How you doing? How you doing tonight? My name is Darius Cephas. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm 25 years old. I work at McDonald's as a security guard. Yes, McDonald's has security. It's crazy. The reason why I'm on this stage today is to let you know that we are winning. We are victorious in our battles against this high corporations. We are winning not only locally, but nationally. The difference, what I'm trying to say is, we are working people standing united to create a change in our economy and in our lives. In other words, we are a union. let you in on a couple of little local victories that we had. In Houston, Texas, where Houston at? In Houston, Texas, I heard a story. It was 165 degrees in one of y'all stores. 165 degrees. Y'all walked out of y'all job, got 100 signatures, delivered it to the franchise owner, and you let him know you're not going to stay working in conditions like that. And what did y'all get? A brand new AC unit the next day. Another victory. A lot of cities here, from Boston to California, from all the way up in New York to all the way down south. A lot of cities are winning paid sick days. And the last victory is from my hometown. We have paid family leave, which means if little man gets sick, mama can stay home and take care of little man and get paid. So I want to thank y'all for my time. I appreciate y'all, and we fight until we drop.
You've been listening to voices from the first Fight for 15 convention held August 12th and August 13th, 2016 in Richmond, Virginia. This is On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital, produced for WPFW Pacifica Radio in Washington, D.C. I'm Esther Averam, and I thank you for listening. You can reach this show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can also listen to all of our shows. Please don't forget to like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Raise your voice out there. Peace.